Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
And welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. And this is a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. And tonight I have a guest. She is a psychologist, and she specializes in working with adults. And her name is Dr. Rosalyn Laudati. Welcome.
Thank you. So nice to be here, Dr. Sage. I'm pleased to be one of your guests.
Thank you so much for joining me. Did I get your name right?
You did. Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
I want to make sure. Well, we have a really interesting topic that you're bringing with us tonight to share. And it is about the concept of ageism and aging and really how it impacts our lives in so many different ways. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience in general as a psychologist and sort of like what your favorite topics are to talk about in general?
Well, Dr. Sage, I have many favorite topics, but tonight I think I want to talk about the concept of ageism in general and ageism in America specifically. First of all, I think that the population, I know that the population is aging. Demographers have told us that there is a big bulge in the elder population. From about age 70 onward, we see a 3%. There are 3% more women than there are men in the population. Mm-hmm. But in general, the people over 50 are becoming the predominant demographic in the country. So lots of things have to be geared to the over 50 crowd.
Absolutely. So in lieu of your joining me tonight, I pulled some quick stats, which are that two things I found, that the number of Americans ages 65 and older is projected to more than double from 46 million today to over 98 million by 2060, and that by 2030, all baby boomers will be older than 65. They will expand the size of the older population so that one in every five residents will be retirement age. So this really is a relevant topic. What you're saying is we are aging, right? There's a huge number of people in our population who are aging and heading into a different part of life than they were in before. So it's going to affect all of us, yes?
Yes, it's a different chapter. But what we make of that chapter is up for grabs. And I think that age has a different connotation these days. In the past, people of a certain age all looked, quote unquote, old. Now people don't look old. Now people
not keep around
fit.
Here.
No, they keep fit.
Right.
And they use products, they use clothing, they use things to enhance their appearances. And, well, they should. Because mm-hmm. if you look good, you feel good. Mm-hmm. And if you feel good, you'll do more. Mm-hmm. And that will aid longevity.
I agree. Tell me about in your practice, or sort of how does this show up in the people that you work with? And where did it sort of, you know, pique your interest even more?
Well, I guess I see only adults. I used to see the whole spectrum, but now I've limited my practice just to adults because that's what I enjoy. And I see that people, first of all, they need more money to live longer. People have usually not saved up enough money to last their lifetime, and certainly post-retirement, they haven't saved enough. Mm-hmm. Secondly, people are fit longer. And they want things to do. They want to be productive. Everybody wants to be productive. Nobody wants to sit around, be a couch potato as a retired person. Mm-hmm. They want to be productive. They want to do things. So a lot of people are choosing not to retire or to get a second job, a second career after retirement because it makes them feel good. It makes them, it helps them to earn money, but it makes them feel good. It keeps the mind active. It keeps them in touch with other people, which is really a crucial topic right there.
Absolutely.
People have to be in touch with other people. All of this helps with satisfaction, happiness, quality of life.
I think that's a really good point. You're right. I mean, we're living longer, so we need more money to live longer. Yes. That makes sense. And we don't just want to stop living because we've reached a certain age. And so I think that that's really the root of it. And I noticed that, and it's sort of a cliche, but when people retire, they often don't do well. They start having health issues and mental health issues. Can you share your experience with that?
Most definitely. That is very accurate. If people don't prepare well for retirement, they find themselves in a kind of a post-traumatic shock. When they leave their jobs, and then there's what next? And if there's nothing, if there's not sufficient planning, it can really be a downer. So I have helped people at different stages of retirement, and also from different professions, to find something new post-retirement. Now, some people choose, okay, they're not going to retire. They like their jobs well enough, and they like their lifestyle, and they want to stay. Others want something different, but they don't want to be couch potatoes. They want to do something productive, maybe even earn some more money, and it really depends on the individual. But being active, keeping the mind active, all of those things are really important, especially when they involve other people, because loneliness and aging make for shorter lifespan. There is research to show that.
Right. Our sense of connection never ends. The need for it never ends, right?
Right.
Right.
And there have been some studies to show that when elderly people have the company of others, they live longer. When elderly people do not, when they don't even have like a Meals on Wheels person coming to visit, their lifespans are shortened and there's much more depression.
Right. It reminds me of babies, right? In the early studies in World War II, like, we need human connection and compassion and engagement. No matter what age we are, we need that to thrive. Just being like, just getting our food isn't enough, right? Just receiving something like
right,
that.
Right. We have to have conversation. We have to have touch. Mm-hmm. We have to have connectedness, mm-hmm. whatever that means, everything.
And I think that in our culture, we have such issues around aging because we don't talk about it. And so issues like intimacy and growing older and all of that, they're kind of not talked about the way that they should be. And so I think people get there and they sort of think, okay, well, am I supposed to like end everything now? What about this part of my vibrant self? What do I do with all of that? And it's important, you know?
It's very important. And I think what we have to do is look at a redefinition of all of that. Because age right now is, I think it shouldn't be looked at just chronologically. In other words, age is a number. Okay, it's a chronological number. But it doesn't really reflect where the person is in their lifespan. I think age is different from the chronological age of the body. It's really a way of thinking. It's a way of keeping yourself. Maybe we should say we have a wellness indicator instead of age. Maybe when we apply for a job, it shouldn't be age. It should be wellness indicator. When people go online for dating, they shouldn't put age. Perhaps they should put a wellness indicator so that people can be opened up to more possibilities.
I think that's a good idea, because I think there is, obviously, we know there's a significant amount of age discrimination in our country. And I even came across a little bit of a few things that we're talking about, that Facebook has allowed, you know, recruiters and companies to target age-based demographics to avoid older professionals altogether.
That is really outrageous.
Right.
AARP has done some studies on the older worker, and they have found that older workers stay on the job longer, they are very loyal to the company, they work harder, and they get more engaged with their coworkers than younger workers. So AARP has done some research on this to show that hiring an older worker is really a good bet for a company.
Yes, and it seems like the companies haven't quite gotten that message, because the studies are showing that people over 50 actually don't often leave their jobs voluntarily, that they actually are, you know, sort of pushed out in some way, and then finding another job becomes a whole other level of difficulty for many people after age 50. So, you know, what do you think about that, and what do we do about that?
Yes, I've seen the casualties of that many times, that the over 50 worker is edged out, or is quote unquote laid off. Maybe they're too expensive for the company, because the company can hire some younger workers at half the pay. It's very tough for the older worker to then get rehired. Now, this is where appearance counts. Unfortunately, so much in our society is based on appearance. So if the person is going to be rehired, they have to look younger than their years. And because they have to put an age down on the application, it really sometimes does hamper their chances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually came across a study they had done where they had sent out 40,000 applications, I guess they had posted, and they split them by age. And they found a significant difference in callbacks based on age. I mean, exact same resume, so the exact same education and experience. But age alone was a significant factor in whether they were invited to even come in for interviews.
This is a real stigma.
Yeah,
and it's kind of egregious that our society allows this. And maybe it will change, because if companies start to take seriously these studies like AARP study, they might change some of the criteria they use to hire somebody instead of asking for age on the application, trying something else. It would be better.
I agree. I think that it is a difficult concept to try to get people to understand in terms of, like, what do we do with this? How do we solve this problem? I know it's not an easy problem, because even as you said, oh, well, you know, your looks matter, there's a part of me that struggles with that, because on the one hand, like, I want us to be able to be who we are, right? I mean, I want to look good and all those things, but the reality is, I think around here, people are overdoing it and trying to look young, and it contributes to, you know, lack of mental health in some ways, this obsession with just, you know, so there's these two extremes. Looking good, feeling good, and then who we really are. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? It's sort of this mixed crock pot of issues associated with aging and what we look like.
Well, everybody doesn't have to go for plastic surgery.
Absolutely. Don't tell them that around here.
I think everybody does, though, have to exercise. Mm-hmm. It's really crucial for brain health.
Absolutely.
For cognition, for mood. So exercise is really important. And if people exercise, they can present themselves looking young and fit, looking flexible, having good balance, having good posture. That's a freebie.
Right. Right. You don't have to just put your shoes on. You can just walk out the door and get that one. With you. I agree.
And it really does make a giant difference. So people are more alert when they exercise. Their mood is better. Depression is less frequent when people exercise.
Absolutely.
And cognitive decline, like, for example, studies on Alzheimer's. Well, they've studied many different factors that might influence the delay of Alzheimer's. In a very important study that came out of UCI, the one factor that really seemed to trump all the others was the factor of exercise. That seemed to have some really positive effects on forestalling any sort of cognitive decline, whereas other things like different vitamins and crossword puzzles and other behavioral things did not.
Right.
Fitness was the most important thing.
I believe it. I don't know about you, but I find even my younger clients sometimes, you know, it's such a cliche, but like, okay, let's talk about what are you doing to exercise, you know? And people look at you like, oh, I'm fine. But it really, truly does regulate well-being from so many levels of the spectrum in terms of that.
It really does. And if people start exercising when they're in their 20s and keep it up, they will stay fit throughout. It's just that, and people can start at any age. They can start in their 40s, they can start in their 50s, they can even start in their 70s to exercise, and it will have terrific outward and inward benefits.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that the clients you see are already doing some of these things, or how often do you have to begin to help them transition in terms of maintenance and aging and things like that with exercise or well-being?
Well, I see a spectrum from 18 to 90, say. Mm-hmm. And I think just about everybody needs a little nudge in the direction of, let's get fit, let's get outside, let's get some sunshine, let's get walking, let's do some exercise. Mm-hmm. A lot of people need a little bit of a nudge to get going and doing it. So,
yeah, and I think in this part of the country, on the coast, we often have more exposure to health and well-being. And, you know, certainly living out here, where up until recently it wasn't raining all the time, we can exercise, right? But other parts of the country where the weather really prohibits it, or the demographics or the socioeconomic levels, I think that many parts of the country, when you look at sort of average weight and things like that, you know, it really does become a hindrance for many people and a block.
Yes, it does. Thank goodness more and more indoor facilities are popping up, and people are able to go do some workouts inside.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about dating as we age.
That's a fun topic.
For all of our listeners out there who are not in the younger dating pool, what's been your experience with your patients in terms of dating, let's say, over 50?
Okay, well, I think there are a lot of single people out there over the age of 50, and I always encourage them to keep at it, because the worst thing is being alone and lonely in elder years. I think that the way people meet people these days is different from what people had in their youth. They went to dances, they met people through friends. Those are still good, but not as frequently occurring in the society as they once were. So what do people do? They go online. I'm in favor of going online. I think people should be absolutely cautious, read between the lines, be discriminating. That said, I think that it's a good way to meet people, because the exposure to many thousands of people as opposed to a small subject pool makes it really practical. Now, as for online dating, that being said, the cautions and all of that, I think it's a good way to get started. But I don't think, I'm not in favor of people having to put chronological age on this.
Amen.
Because I think it's there's more to be explored than just chronological age. Again, maybe you could put your health indicator or something like that, or even decade, but again, decade is an age. I think people should be open-minded enough to see this person for their interests and their personality, and, well, age, chronological age, well, that doesn't need to be an absolute criterion for selection. So I think it would be better if chronological age were not put into the online dating. I never encourage people to lie about their age when they go on an online dating app. I do suggest that the dating apps themselves take off the chronological age and find some other indicator, like a wellness indicator, that would be better for people mm-hmm. to do.
Well, I find a couple things. One is that oftentimes, and I hear this from my, you know, female clients in their 30s, which is just, you know, not being in my 30s, is that men, and this is, I'm just going to say it, what happens oftentimes is men around here won't even want to choose a woman in their same decade. So if they're 50, they're looking for, you know, 19 to 35, or, you know, maybe 42. I very rarely have heard clients tell me that they date up to their exact age. That's one thing. And then because you can select the, you know, the limits to the searches, if you're doing that, you're ruling out everybody who isn't a certain chronological age. So oftentimes they'll list, like, the age will say they're 42, but then somewhere in the profile, it'll say, I'm actually 49. Right. So it's like you're technically disclosing that you what you are. But all this is forcing us to sort of bend the rules or tweak things in a different way. And it makes people feel like, oh, well, you weren't honest. So that means you're not honest about anything else. So I think it's a setup for us. I really do.
I think it's a setup, too. I think what would be the concept if age were eliminated? So you looked on a profile and you saw somebody interesting. You had no clue what their age is, but they look pretty attractive. Well, it would be good to respond to that person mm-hmm. and not have to worry about, are they in the decades that I find acceptable? I think it would be much better to eliminate all indications of chronological age and just have people open their minds, read the dating profiles and say, that person looks interesting. Maybe I should contact them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that here's where I think there's a little bit of a challenge. One is people don't put their current photos. This I know. Right? Like here is me in like 1980 or in the 90s. It's like, that is no longer relevant. I don't care what you look like 10 years ago. Right? And then I have heard from some of my other clients who want to have a baby with somebody that, of course, although we have expanded our abilities for fertility, there is something to be said about the science around the ability to become pregnant in certain parts of our lives. And so there are some people, like I've seen older people who haven't had a child and they want a younger partner. They've waited. So what do you think about that? What do you do about those issues?
Well, I think that's certainly an important situation. If people want to bear children, they really do need to stay within limits of aging. I just think that when women age, and let's say we're outside of the childbearing years, let's say when women age, they are still vibrant and fun and beautiful.
Absolutely.
And lots of women do start to date younger men. For example, the president of France, everybody is applauding President Macron, his wife, beautiful wife, Brigitte Macron. She's 20 years older than he. and they have a good marriage, but they're not the only ones. Heidi Klum is with a guy who's 13 years younger. Julianne Moore married a man who's much younger. And Hugh Jackman married a woman who's much older.
Right.
I think 20 years older. Mm-hmm. So people are starting to expand their views of what aging means, or maybe it doesn't mean. Maybe it's about activity level. It's about interests. It's about being able to keep up with one another in terms of life's goals. Now, if someone wants to have children, of course they have to stay in those younger age ranges. But when people are talking about having a partner for the rest of their lives,
right.
A partner who shares interests and yep. who shares activity level, mm-hmm. Age right. is not important. What's important is health, right. health indicators.
Right, and compatibility and all things we want, right? You're right. I was doing the same thing, and we were talking about the French president, and so I guess there is actually a 24-year age gap, and that is the same age gap between Trump and Melania. And no one ever talks about that age gap.
Now, isn't that surprising?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, that just shows you what a double standard it is. And I do believe, of course, that the French appreciate older women. So maybe I'll head over there soon. But I mean, honestly, like that's just such an example of it. It was such a conversation about his wife being, you know, older than him. And then Trump's wife being the same thing, younger. I think there's such a double standard.
Maybe our society is starting to open up. I hope it is. To not see older man, younger woman as the only way to go. There's a concept of age heterogamy, which means you don't marry somebody in your own age range. You marry somebody of a different age. It could be 1 year, it could be 5 years, it could be 20 years. Okay. And I think our society may be opening up to more disparity in ages between marital partners. I hope so. I think it opens up a whole new world of more people to love.
Absolutely. Because I think, you know, I always say all the time, I say, you know, even in the greatest relationship, relationships are challenging, right? Even if you have the greatest partner, I don't care where you start, monogamy or however you want to shape it, even if it includes other things, being with another human being, living, breathing, sleeping, marrying, growing with is a challenging thing to do. So why limit it even more?
Why limit it even more? That's right. It is challenging. And couples have to really work at making their relationships healthy and strong. And the most important thing is not age. It's certainly communication and compatibility and the willingness to compromise. Mm-hmm. That's what matters, mm-hmm. not age.
Mm-hmm. What has been your experience with your practice, I guess, and women who are finding, are you noticing the trend also in your office of women dating younger men?
I am. I'm seeing the trend that people who work hard find partnership. So even people over 50 who want to find a partner, if they work hard, if they leave no stone unturned, they will find a partner. And I think that's great. I think it's encouraging. I think that people sometimes get discouraged. Now we have more opportunities to meet people than we've ever had before in this society. And I think you can't get discouraged. I think you have to just decide you're going to put in the energy, effort, time, maybe even some money to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. What are the challenges? So we're talking about the benefits, right, of dating somebody who is not necessarily in your similar age range. What do you think are the challenges? Like, let's just be real about that. Okay. So let's say, if I date older, of course, you can have health issues associated with age at some point, you know, but what have you seen in terms of what could the downsides be?
Well, certainly the health issues are the biggest downside, because if one person is 20 years, two decades older, yeah, they're going to be more likely, although not certainly, more likely to incur certain health risks. And I think that has to be discussed. I think people have to really keep an eye on any risks they have, any congenital things, any tendencies in the family. But it's not insurmountable. If people take good care of themselves, that does not have to be a big detriment to continuing in a relationship where there's age heterogamy.
Mm-hmm. Now, I agree. I think, I mean, of course, and you can't control. I mean, you can have issues and be completely healthy. There's no guarantee, right? We don't come with a guarantee of anything when we go into a relationship with someone, that we're going to stay healthy or always look a certain way. So I think there's an acceptance and flexibility we have to have. I think that's fair, right?
That's right. There are no guarantees in life.
Right.
So you go for what seems right and what gives you quality of life and what is a quality relationship. And you try to think about what issues lie ahead and you plan ahead.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think the thing is that not all of us are mature, right? It doesn't matter how old we are.
Oh, right. That's absolutely right.
Right. And yes. So I think that on the one hand, you could say, I do think there's something to be said for really large age gaps in terms of like the way I grew up or the world has changed. And so I found myself thinking like, this is great, but what about like the deeper conversations or living life? But yet you can find younger people who have lived a lot of life, who have old souls, right? So I don't think it's a cut and dry. But I do think as you get just personally into the 20 year and beyond, maybe 15, there can be some things that you just don't understand about each other because our culture and lives are different. But like I said, I also think it matters about sort of your own life experiences and how mature you are. I don't mean like I'm so mature and grown up, but I mean what your capacity is in a relationship with somebody of a different age range.
Yes, there have been some studies on younger men, older women relationships. And one of the factors that seemed to come through was that these younger men are more mature and seeking maturity in a partner. Mm-hmm. And so they would find themselves within an older woman who has that maturity, who understands their need for maturity, and the relationship is at a level that is comfortable for each of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that maturation, emotional maturity, really is a factor that may outweigh everything else.
I agree. As I was doing a little bit of research for our show, you know, I think there still is quite, I still believe there is some stigma around older women and younger men, and that we're looking, if we're an older woman, for a boy toy, or, you know, that he doesn't have the same value or role. And some of the articles said that some of the men can feel a little powerless in some regard, but that can happen in any relationship. To me, the dynamic is about your energy and how you respect each other and things like that. So I don't necessarily, I could see certainly how it could be, but I think that's really like we were saying before, it's really about the individual human beings in the relationship.
Yes, and a lot of articles in the past have been written about how powerless women feel in these May-December relationships where the guy is 24 years older, wields all the power, all the money, and women feel powerless. Mm-hmm. So this has been around for ages. I think a healthy relationship where people are treat one another as equals, that's the gold standard, perhaps, not a relationship where there's a power trip.
I agree. And I think that can happen in any couple. You can be 1 year apart, right? You can be three days apart and have that issue. So that's a challenging one. Mm-hmm. I did a little more research, too, on sort of how we age differently. And so the first one I came across is the idea of longevity, which is that the CDC, according to the CDC, the average life expectancy for men in the U.S. is 76.4 years, while for women it's 81.2. What are your thoughts about that? That's an almost five-year age difference.
Yes, and I think it's going to continue to grow as women, women seem to last longer. So what do we do with that? Well, there are more women than there are men, and people want companionship. So there are going to be older women dating younger men, and there are going to be other kinds of family groups. For example, maybe people will live together as a family, as dear friends, because nobody wants to be alone, and there aren't enough heterosexual pairs to go around, mm-hmm. and people aren't necessarily going to go for a homosexual pair that if it doesn't fit for them. So what are some alternative ways to live? Well, in a pseudo family group, I think, would be a good thing in terms of keeping away loneliness, share expenses, share ideas about aging and surviving and how to live together. I think people, loneliness is really bad for people. Mm. Loneliness causes depression. Loneliness causes early death. Mm-hmm. So alternative ways of keeping away that loneliness will be explored in the next few years. As women become more populous, men less so, there have to be ways to get that connection, that companionship, that friendship. to keep people going.
I agree. I think that's an interesting topic, right? How can we reconfigure the way we are aging? I mean, look at finances and loneliness and loss of connection. I mean, people's children, they used to, in other cultures, right, people live with their children, as adult children. But now people move all over the U.S., all over the world. We don't have those communities the way we used to. And so many times you have parents whose adult children live somewhere else and are raising children. And so this idea of reconfiguring, you know, you're not needing to go into some facility. You're able to function and be well, but you need the, you know, the financial / companionship support. I like that idea of sort of reconfiguring how we deal with that.
I think it's going to have to happen in the future, because there are many, many lonely seniors who are in good shape, who are healthy, but just don't have any companionship. Either their children move out of town, or their children don't see them, or their spouses have died. Mm-hmm. It's really a sad situation, but there will be more and more of these people living alone, in good shape, but not having anyone.
Right.
And society has to figure out some other ways to make this lifestyle more viable and not so detrimental to the individual.
Right. That reminds me of, have you ever seen Grace and Frankie? Do you know that show on Netflix?
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh, I love it. But the two of them are living together, right? Two women. Their husbands ended up marrying each other. But I highly recommend that series. But it just says so much for aging women. They just tackle so many amazing topics. And it's also really funny, because you can't go wrong with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin.
Oh, right.
Right. Yes, oh my gosh. They're at their prime. They really are. Okay, so the next sort of area where I discovered we age a little differently is with regard to hormones. So that both men and women experience sexual changes with age, right? So for women, it's commonly menopause, which happens around the age of 50, but clearly can vary pretty significantly. And for men, aging doesn't really bring on a sort of sudden change, but it's more gradual, with testosterone levels declining over time, often called andropause, I guess. So how do you think that issue with menopause, I do think that men have a stigma against women who are no longer fertile, even if they don't want a baby. Oh my God, she's in menopause. There's something weird about being 50 or whatever it is and beyond. What have you seen in that regard?
Well, I think if people, if it's not made a giant issue, it won't be a giant issue. If people don't talk about it being something that's indicating aging, I think we have to, look at it differently. The connotation is a bad one. Well, let's change it. Let's change aging to be something that's not to be avoided or disdained. Let's change aging to be something that's, kind of cool and vintage, carries with it more experiences, more and varied experiences, more colorful experiences, and not look at just the deterioration of the body, but look at, what can this person add to my life? They've been so many places, done so many things, met so many people. It's not about the deterioration of the body,
right,
but the stimulation of the mind.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's what's happening, though, because we're really talking about sexuality. What we're really talking about is like, oh, we're aging and things aren't working as well. Mm-hmm. And I do think that we don't talk about menopause or for men, what happens for men, enough. I really don't. I think that people often feel isolated and what's wrong with me. I have a lot of female patients who in my office in their early 50s, they're like, I'm going crazy, you know, and it's hormones. It's mm-hmm. it's that they haven't seen a doctor and they're, so I do think that we need to talk about aging in so many different ways, just so we can really be our best selves and live with better well-being if we have access to the tools that we need to do that with.
And I think sexuality in elder years does take on a different tone, because sexuality doesn't have to be the same sexuality that it was in the 20s and 30s.
Right.
It can be something entirely different. It can be more nuanced, more enhanced, different. The five senses are still awake and alive, and mm-hmm. it doesn't have to just be a certain kind of physical intimacy. It can be a stimulation of the mind and stimulation of the fantasies and the imagination, and
right.
So much more than just the physicality of it.
I agree. And I think we really don't talk about that. And it's like, ew, I don't want to think about that, you know? And it's like, wait a minute, you know, you're going to be there someday. I see older people, you know? And so I think that you're right. It has to be a different configuration of how we engage in our intimate lives as we age. But for many reasons, also because, you know, monogamy for 50 years isn't the same deal as it was in the beginning either.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest, right? Yes. What, no matter what you look like or what your body can do, things just change as we change.
And as these long marriages go on, they have to do some changing. They have to do communicating. They have to reconfigure things. They have to keep it fresh, and not in the way that it was fresh in the 20s, but in a way that might be new and different in the 70s.
Right. Yeah, I love Esther Perel's work. You know her? I love her work. And sort of really looking at how we define monogamy in relationships. We look at, you know, the infidelity rate being so high and divorce being so high, and how our culture values my happiness versus the family, right? In sort of other cultures where you look at, well, having an extramarital affair isn't really anything unusual in some cultures. And so I think we have to really reevaluate everything in that regard, because we are living longer and we are, you know... All these things have an impact on our lives.
And I think people need to go into marriage knowing that marriage requires work. It's not going to just go on automatic once you
it's not a Disney movie? Wait a minute, what?
I always encourage people to come in once a year for a marriage checkup.
Mm-hmm. And tune up.
Yep. Tweak it, tune yep. it, yep. yes, to fix it up. I think the best marriages are the ones where people have worked on them, where they work on communication, they work on compromise, they work on doing things together, they learn about the other and they keep that in mind. And sometimes they put the other in front of the self, and sometimes it's equal.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that some of the best couples I've worked with are the ones who come in earlier. You know, often they get in their office and then one person's got one foot out the door. And so much pain and so much hurt and so much wound has occurred. It's like, I'm not a magician, people. Like, I can't work magic. You know, I'm like,
they wait too long. The marriage is already on the rocks and big rocks.
Yes.
So that it's too far gone and they've fallen out of love. If the love is gone, it makes it really hard. And I think the prognosis is really poor.
I agree.
If people come in earlier with their marriages, it may be savable.
Right.
And most likely, if both people are motivated, something can be done.
Right. Well, yeah. And if you think about that, and if it doesn't work, because we're living longer, the average person is having two or three long-term relationships throughout the course of their lifespan. You know, you can have 20 years. I mean, it's crazy how much that's affecting us too. And so I think we need better tools for dealing with those things.
We definitely need better tools. I've often thought it would be a great thing to require that if the state required that people got marriage class before they got their wedding license. Mm-hmm. It would help them to learn to communicate better, how to deal with conflict, how to deal with financial issues, because financial issues seem to be always a big
trigger,
conflict producer.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and I always wonder, because I think, you know, there are some religions, I think the Catholic religion requires some classes and things like that, but I also think when you're in that honeymoon, a love-addicted phase, you justify and minimize everything. So I think some time has to go by, too. You know, I think getting time to know somebody, getting classes and getting skills. And I always say, I wish I had a therapist saying, are you sure this is what you want? You know what I mean? Like, someone to challenge you with love and support, which is what I think is helpful when you're ready for it. And it's a skill, I will say, in our job, right? You can't always do that. But I think that it takes a bunch of factors to really go in and to choose a healthy partner. Of course, we have our childhoods, right? It goes on and on and on. It's hard.
It's hard. And isn't it funny that the state requires a 6-month interlocutory period before a person can get divorced, but before they get married, they can get married without any training
or
anything. It would be very nice if the state required that everybody take a marriage class. I think it would perhaps save some marriages, or maybe it would even save some people from going into a bad marriage.
Right, I agree. What do you think are the age-related issues in marriage?
That's a very good question. I think age-related questions are, of course, health. Both people have to stay healthy in order to keep things going. But there, it's a real difference of activity level that I see causes problems in a marriage. Mm-hmm. If people age similarly, but one is a couch potato and the other has a lot of vim and vigor, it causes conflicts and problems in the relationship. Mm-hmm. So that would be a stimulus for the healthy partner to look outside the marriage to find companionship.
Right.
And that has to be prevented mm-hmm. by talking, compromising, finding things that both are willing to do. I think that's how I see aging affecting relationships. When one partner, and I'm not going to say man or woman, when one partner kind of falls behind mm-hmm. and the other one continues to grow, mm-hmm. it makes for disharmony.
Absolutely. And I was also thinking about the couples who everything is going well and then a partner becomes ill. And so now they have to care for the partner and, you know, what that does to relationship. And it may not be age related, but certainly as we age, the potential for more issues is probably more prevalent.
Yes, for caregivers, it is a very hard job. If a partner is very ill, chronically or terminally ill, it's a very hard job for the other partner to be the caregiver. What I always say to caregivers is you must take care of yourself first in order to be able to be a good caregiver to your loved one. So you have to take breaks. You have to go out with friends. You have to do things for yourself. You have to recharge your own batteries in order to be a really good caregiver for your spouse.
Yeah, and I don't think we talk about that enough either. I think that people are often just slugging through it on their own, right? Just trying to get through it and don't really have that support. So I think it's important.
It's very important to have support because it's a really draining job being mm-hmm. a caregiver.
Absolutely.
And it's a very depressing job and it can be a very lonely job unless people reach out and say, hey, I need some help. I need to get a part-time respite worker or something mm-hmm. to give me a little break.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's just a part of the course of life. Like we were saying, there's no guarantee that couldn't happen in your 20s to your partner, right?
So, that's right.
You know, it's a journey no matter where you go and where you start. In our last couple minutes, anything else that you think that would be, you know, something you want to share with our listeners about aging or your experience or what you love to do in terms of working with people? Just tell us a little bit more about yourself and anything else you want to share.
Well, I really love what I do. I've been a psychologist for now 20-ish years, and there isn't a dull moment. A day never goes by when I think I'm bored. I'm not bored ever. I love my work. I love to help people. And I think that more people could have happier lives if they got psychological consultation at the early stages of a problem rather than waiting and hoping it'll just go away. A stitch in time saves nine. That's an old adage. But a couple of sessions with a psychologist early on can really help to forestall problems before they start, before they get worse. This would be problems for the individual or at work or with a partner. It really, having a little psychotherapy when the problems just start can really shortcut the long-term extent of problems. People can learn to cope with problems. People can learn how to make solutions. They can do it so much quicker and so much better if they get help early on.
I totally agree. And I know it's a luxury and it's hard to make happen. And there's a lot of blocks at times to finding good therapy. Even finding a good therapist, I think, is quite challenging for many people.
Well, people can always call the local psychological association, mm-hmm. even the American Psychological Association, and get referrals. So that they can also ask friends. Who did you go to?
Right.
Who was your psychologist?
Right.
I think that these kinds of things are becoming more common. Mm-hmm. The stigma to emotional health is becoming less and less. Mm-hmm. And as people get good results from seeing their psychologist, the word spreads. And hopefully more people will go seek consultation before it's too late or before things really get bad.
I agree. Well, any last bits of wisdom you want to share in terms of your experiences in terms of working and any other populations you'd love to work with as we wrap up?
I love to work with adults, and I would like to see less age-related stigma. I would like to see more open-mindedness about who we want to know as friends and as partners and as dates. I would like to see people opening their minds and saying, just because this person is a different age than I am doesn't mean that has to be a rule out for getting to know this person as a friend.
I love that. Thank you so much. Tell our listeners how they can find you, where you're located, and your information, please.
Okay. I'm Dr. Rosalyn Laudati. I'm located in Newport Beach. I am available on the website of nationalregister.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really enjoyed our topic.
Thank you, Dr. Sage. It's been my pleasure to be your guest.
Wonderful. Hope you'll come back and talk about more things. That'd be wonderful.
Okay, thank you.
You've been listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage, a clinical psychologist, and this show explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. on KX93.5 FM in Laguna Beach. Or you can listen via streaming or download the podcast at any time. We have a lot of great podcasts, actually, on our show. As I say every week, please remember that all topics discussed on the show are not meant to serve for anything other than informational purposes, that we are just two psychologists sharing our thoughts, and we are not giving you any advice or therapeutic advice. But if you are in need of mental health treatment, please reach out and access a mental health provider. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening. I'll see you guys next week. You turn